My name is Yiming Xu, Dr. Z. With me today is David McGann, Senior Consultant at RDA. Today we are going to talk about architecting user interface to improve testability. Before we get started, David, can you please introduce yourself to our audience?
Sure. As you said, my name is David McGann. I'm with RDA Corporation. I'm also a co-lead in RDA's architecture guidance team. So one of my key interests over the past couple of years has actually been in testability and improving testability of applications.
So we are going to talk about architecting user interface to improve testability. What does that really mean?
Over the past several years, we've all gotten accustomed to automated test frameworks like NUnit and now MS Test, which is built right into Visual Studio. And a lot of people spend time automating things like the business data objects or web services. Well, when it comes to the user interface, it's quite a challenge to capture and automate the behavior of the user interface. What happens when you push a button and you expect a result coming back? And so much code finds its way right into these little click events, and there's really no way to capture that. And the problem is amplified even further when you start thinking about the different UI technologies, and maybe you start with a Forms app and now you want to move to a web application. Or maybe you're going to WPF or having a Windows Mobile interface. So how do you preserve the behavior somewhere and maintain its testability?
Can you give us an example to help us understand the points you try to make here?
Sure. Let me just grab a whiteboard marker.
So typically, the way the UI is developed, let's just say that we have some application to debit an amount from an account. So we might have the amount in a text box, and you create a little button, and that button is simply to debit, and you want to debit $500 from your account. So what typically happens is we'll go into code, we'll create some click event, and really this is pretty straightforward click event. We might say that the new balance equals some service dot debit, and we pass it the account number, and we pass it the amount from the text box. Right, that's our typical click event. It's very quick to do. Code it in one line of code. I can show my boss real quick when he comes by my cube wall, so I'm really moving fast. And of course, this service call, let's just say it's WCF, and so I have some type of service layer, right, we're going across, and I could say, look at this, I'm separating all my concerns, I now have business logic on another machine, I'm following all these good practices. That is our typical scenario. Now, the problem that we're seeing, though, is we have actually embedded right here in this click event behavior, right? We have made a call to the service, we're making a debit call, so we're taking the person's account, we're subtracting an amount, and now we're going to render the new balance into the user interface. We've actually taken some behavior and embedded it in this click event. If we ever choose to change the user interface, let's say we don't want a debit button anymore. We want to create a new ATM interface, and you simply click debit 100, debit 50, debit 25. You click a dollar amount, and so no longer do we have the debit. Now we have to, in our code, instead of pulling from the text box that is the amount, now we have to change this code here that pulls maybe from a list box or pulls from a drop-down combo. That we've tied our behavior to a user interface, and we've made it a lot harder to automate that testing. How do you even get to this click event? That click event is called by the forms processor. Whether you're using WinForms or WebForms or WPF, Silverlight, nothing really matters here. The key point is that the rendering engine is calling this click event, and we really have no way to get to this behavior through an automated means. So at this point, I want to take a simple leap and take advantage of a pattern that Martin Fowler talks about often. It's called supervising controller, which is a refinement of model view controller. And the idea is we have our view, and instead of the view understanding the back-end services and understanding the model, the view is going to negotiate with the controller and simply expose the fact that an action happened. Right? The view is nothing more than the human-computer interface. So instead of having our code in the click event here, you're going to take this away. And let's remember, this is our service up here.
Right.
So now, in our click event, all we're going to say is controller debit requested. No parameters, no anything. At this point, the view has no behavioral knowledge whatsoever. All it knows is that the human took an action. It clicked something that said, I want to perform a debit. And it's now throwing it over the fence to the controller and says, controller, I'm sure you know what to do with this. I just want to let you know that somebody wants to do a debit.
So in a sense, you are raising an event or doing something, just telling the system that you basically, this event, this action happened.
Right. And we've taken the behavior out of the view. So now we need this controller, and then you'll see it becomes quite easy to test. So this will be our controller. And let's say the controller, through its interface, what it exposes, it has this debit requested. Okay, so now, if you remember what we had before, we made a service call, right? We called service debit. Now, we need some account information. So we already know that the view has the account information. The controller needs to get that from the view. But certainly the controller doesn't want to know that it's in a text box or a list box or a drop-down. It wants to be oblivious of the data type that it's actually rendered on the screen with. It just wants to say to the view's interface, give me the account. So we'll say view.account. And of course, this assumes that the user's been working totally in the view. They've chosen their account, and now they've entered an amount to debit right on the screen. And then we say view.amount. So we're making the service call. We've asked the view for two pieces of data, the account number and the amount. And the behavior is all happening here. And we can even say view.balance equals. So what we're doing is we're making the service call and now telling the view to render the new balance. Now the view requires an interface as well. So the view exposes something called an account. It exposes something called an amount. Maybe we call it debit amount. And then it exposes something called balance, which of course would have a setter on it. So what we would now have is in our view code, we'd also have some property getters and setters. So we would have something, let's just say it's a string, and we call it balance, and we have a set on it, which does nothing more than say txt balance. Now, I'm not condoning reverse Polish notation or anything. This is
sure.
Just as an example, equals value. So the view actually knows it's stored in a text box. If the UI designers ever change it to be a label or some other type of animated control, they can do whatever they want. The controller is totally insulated from that. So now what we've done is we've set up this perfect platform for testing because we now have taken our behavior and encapsulated it in a class that's detached from the UI.
So David, you are saying that you should decouple the presentation from the behavior by introducing the controller. Then as part of the implementation, you have this viewer. Is that right?
Right. And typically, you would have a one-to-one relationship between a view and a controller. You want to reduce complexity. You don't want one huge controller that every view talks to. I think that's too much code to put in one.
How do you test the behavior since now there is no UI?
Well, typically what I do is I take advantage of not only MS test, but mock objects. So we already talked about the view implementing an interface for things like account and amount. So I have, let's say, iBalanceView. I create a mock object that impersonates iBalanceView. I instantiate my controller with that mock object. And I simply tell the mock, here's what's going to happen. Someone will ask for account and amount, and they're going to return some type of balance to you. And then I assert that the balance is what I expect. So that's as simple as it gets, right? It's just a simple automated test that sets up the mock, sets up an initial set of items that will be requested. We know that we'll be getting a response, and then we just make sure the response matches our expectation. So we've tested behavior, and we don't even have a user interface in place. This is strictly testing the behavior in a component now.
So you're talking about how to test the controller, the behavior, mm-hmm. but still, how do you test the UI elements such as tab orders and also buttons?
I think you still use traditional methods. This is testing behavior specifically. So if you wanted to test things like tab order or the default button press or what font is being displayed, you could take advantage of things like Microsoft's UI automation framework. So now you can write automated tests against that. You can certainly have your QA group walking through and going from page to page, making sure things render correctly. You could take advantage of the load testing framework to make sure that your screens are rendering in a performant way. But the testing that I've shown today is specifically behavior in terms of you take an action, you expect a response, and you're separating that behavior from the UI.
David, you mentioned Windows applications, web applications, and mobile applications.
Mm-hmm.
What do you have to do differently for each of the environments in order to apply this controller view process or approach?
Well, actually, all you need to do, once you have your controller in place, we already said that it publishes an interface, so this is the eye balance controller. Anytime you create a new view, let's say it's a web view, as long as it implements the eye balance view, then you can create a Forms app with eye balance view, create a Windows mobile app if it's going to use the same controller. And then when the view instantiates itself, when it's loading, it would then instantiate a controller of the correct interface. So our balance view creates an eye balance controller, and then the rest is the same. The controller doesn't change at all. So really, you get to reuse this controller regardless of the UI environment. In fact, I did this recently with a client. We started off with a web-based application, and along the way, there were talks about possibly moving to a forms-based application. So it was actually quite simple without changing any back-end technology, just to create a new WinForms app, implement the correct view, instantiate the controller, and then the Forms application was able to take advantage of all the same resources as the web application.
You mentioned the supervising controller. Mm-hmm. People also talked about the passive view.
Right.
How are they related? How are they different?
Well, I see the difference as purist versus practical. The whole idea is to keep business logic or keep behavioral logic out of the view. That's the ultimate goal, so we can have testability. So passive view says the view can know nothing about the back-end data types at all. It's just a conduit to the human being. That's all it is. Whereas supervising controller loosens up the belt a little bit and loosens that restriction. Notice that all I did in my example, I was using some simple data types, just a balance, an account, an amount. These things can be represented in a label or a text box. Once you get into complex data types, like a tree control or a complex list or anything that requires rendering, if you try and do that all in the controller, you're asking for a lot of effort, and there's going to be a lot of manipulation code in the controller, versus letting the view understand a little bit more and have the controller say, hey, view, here's my objects. I need you to render it, and I know it's going into a hierarchical control. Take care of it. And the view can easily do that. It can walk through. It can create nodes. The code is built into the view. It's view manipulation. So again, it's really purist versus practical.
From your experience, are there any extra effort involved with this implementation?
Well, today there's no real out-of-the-box solution to wire up the plumbing between the view and controller. So in my experience, what I have seen is you have a little bit of repetitive code. Every time you have a view that's loading, it would have to instantiate its controller and wire up those interfaces. So what we've actually done with our clients is we've been working with the guidance automation toolkit. So with Visual Studio, you can add your own guidance. You could plug in automated guidance. For instance, the user right-clicks, and typically they have an add context menu so they can add a class or add a new item to a project. In this case, maybe you'd be able to add a new view and controller pair. If you've worked with the Smart Client Software Factory and Composite UI Application Block, you've seen something very similar where you can add a view and presenter, and controller and presenter being synonymous. So we've actually worked with our clients
built automation extensions, and that also affords us the opportunity to embed customer-specific requirements. Sometimes there's naming conventions that have to be followed, different commenting styles, so we can actually embed that in the automation as well.
One question I've been trying to ask you, David, is, as you know, Microsoft has just released an implementation of ASP.NET MVC.
Right.
How do you see that fits into what we just discussed?
Well, the ASP.NET MVC framework is out of the box, so there's no plumbing that you have to specifically write. You can write automated unit tests against the controller, and you get a lot of the benefits from what I talked about. I'd say the only thing you have to keep in mind is if you're going to use not only web, but you're also maybe going to go to forms versions of the app, WPF, Windows Mobile, whatever, you would probably have to refactor your controller somewhat to fit, since ASP.NET MVC currently is specifically tied to web apps.
If there's one thing that you would like our audience to take away, what that would be?
So as developers and architects, one thing we really have to keep in mind is maintainability and testability of our code. So if you are involved in any type of enterprise application, it's really key to be able to automate as much as possible different pieces of your system. And in this case, we're automating the behavior of the user interface. Now, of course, if you're building a throwaway application, proof of concept, something to exercise one of your components, you just need to do it in 15 minutes, I think this is probably overkill, but anything on the enterprise level, anything that has to be preserved over months or years, I think this is critical.
Thank you so much for spending time sharing your views on this controller user interface testability discussion.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Thanks a lot for having me on.
Thank you.